Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on the reaction of non-Americans to the decision by two grand juries not to punish police officers involved in the deaths of African Americans.
There's an assumption that somehow there's something that's gone on that isn't quite right.
Then, we will report on the continuing debate on the death penalty in the United States. A view from London on grand jury decisions in the U.S. and how Americans feel about the death penalty. Those are our stories today on As It Is from VOA. People around the world are again talking about race relations in the United States. Recently, two U.S. grand juries decided not to recommend legal action against two police officers. The officers were involved in the deaths of two African Americans in two separate cases, one in Missouri and the other in New York. The grand jury decisions led to protests in cities across the nation. News organizations throughout the world reported on the story. Many showed images of the protesters. The demonstrations helped to motivate some people overseas. In London, students at King's College have been talking about the grand jury decisions and the unrest in their classes.
It's not a good thing.
That is Xian Yingchao, a 23-year-old economics student from China. He has studied in the United States.
A lot of Chinese press, they said like, oh, in U.S., they always say, they always advocate the human rights, but look at them. It's like they have two standards of human rights.
53-year-old Paul Zimmerman is from London. He is studying for a master's degree. He says the grand juries may have made the right decision, but many people just do not feel good about it.
There's an assumption that somehow there's something that's gone on that isn't quite right. Maybe they come to the right conclusion, but in a sense, that doesn't really matter.
Mr. Zimmerman says the election of Barack Obama for two terms as president does not mean that America's racial issues have been solved.
Electing a black president in theory is transformational, but there's a lot that needs to happen in order to correct many, many years of systemic unfairness.
Xian Yingchao agrees.
One black president cannot change these things. They have to change their justice system, even their laws.
Joshua Simon teaches at King's College. He says his students recognize the concerns about the grand jury decisions. But he says they are hopeful because of the strong reaction to the decisions.
Kind of it as a pretty shocking demonstration of the remaining racial injustices in the United States, and a pretty encouraging sign that the population of the United States isn't going to take these events lying down.
Mr. Simon says many people believe the United States has made great progress in improving race relations. But he says the recent incidents have shown how much work remains. He says poor race relations hurt American efforts to be considered a moral leader. Most industrialized nations have stopped executing criminals. But the death penalty is still legal in many parts of the United States. Public opinion studies show that support for the death penalty among Americans is lower than it once was, but it remains strong at around 60%. However, the same surveys show that even death penalty supporters have concerns about the justice system and the way executions are carried out. When people are put to death in the prison in Huntsville, Texas, death penalty opponents often demonstrate outside the building.
Today, around the state, people are gathered to say no to the death penalty.
Texas carries out more executions than any other state. Last year, it put 16 people to death. Surveys show most people in Texas support the death penalty. Dudley Sharp is among those supporters. He says executions ensure that killers do not kill again and persuade others not to kill.
The evidence that the death penalty deters no one doesn't exist. The evidence that the death penalty deters some people is overwhelming.
Pat Monks is a lawyer in Houston, Texas. He opposes the death penalty and criticizes the justice system that imposes it.
It assumes that this system is perfect in one instance, maybe one instance, you know, and it's not.
Pat Monks notes that in some cases, new evidence has led to the release of prisoners who have been sentenced to death. He says the death penalty, also known as capital punishment, is an ancient custom that Americans took from another country that no longer uses it.
It's from England, common law system, in which the king owns all of us. We're all subject to the king.
In early December, an appeals court ordered a stay or stoppage in the planned execution of Scott Panetti. He had been found guilty of murder. Doctors say he suffers from the mental disorder schizophrenia. Catherine Kays of the Texas Defenders Service serves as his lawyer. She is pleased that his case is getting nationwide attention.
What we see in the stay is this emerging awareness in the United States that we don't want to execute people with serious mental illness.
The state of Texas says Scott Panetti understands the court case against him and his death sentence. But Ms. Kays disagrees. And she says executing a person with a severe mental illness does not serve the purpose that most people expect from the death penalty.
We are supposed to be reserving the death penalty for the worst of the worst. The problem is, when we get into choosing who that is, we're not consistent.
Surveys show that younger Americans support life jail sentences for murderers more than they support the death penalty. And less than half of those asked support executing people who are mentally ill. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz reporting from VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. For all of the women and men of the Voice of America all around the world, thank you for spending some time with us today. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time with another edition of As It Is. I hope you'll join us then here on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Another political fight is taking shape in Washington, D.C. At issue, proposed changes to the way the Internet is regulated in the United States. One side wants rules to suspend plans to charge extra for some heavy users of the Internet. The other side says new rules will slow the economic growth fueled by online services. Both sides say their way of thinking will lead to continued innovation. Earlier this year, U.S. regulators proposed big changes in the way the Internet operates in the country. The Federal Communications Commission voted to offer a plan that could affect Internet service providers like AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast. Under the plan, the service providers could make deals with companies like Google and Facebook to provide them with faster paths to get their content to consumers. Some consumer groups and Internet companies oppose the plan. So do a majority of people questioned in a new University of Delaware study. President Barack Obama also dislikes the proposed changes. He spoke recently about how the Internet should be organized around ideas like openness, fairness, and freedom.
There are no gatekeepers deciding which sites you get to access. There are no toll roads on the information superhighway. This set of principles, the idea of net neutrality, has unleashed the power of the Internet and given innovators the chance to thrive. Abandoning these principles would threaten to end the Internet as we know it.
The Federal Communications Commission is an independent regulator. So President Obama cannot order the FCC to make changes. Last week, the president sought to persuade commission members to regulate consumer Internet services like a public utility. Harold Fertgott-Roth is an economist and former FCC commissioner. He says the Internet adds hundreds of billions of dollars to the U.S. economy. He adds that new rules would be unnecessary and unwise.
American online companies are the leading online companies in the world in practically every field. I think that's in part a result of our lighter regulatory approach relative to a lot of other countries.
He says proposals to govern the Internet as if it were a telephone company would interfere in many decisions, including pricing. He says those decisions should be made by people who operate the business. The former commissioner says even the threat of new rules is bad for the investments needed to support innovation on the Internet. Some Republican members of Congress and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce are in agreement with Mr. Fertgott-Roth. The Chamber of Commerce speaks for many major businesses. The issue will likely be fought over by regulators, the courts, and Congress. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. Welcome to This is America from VOA Learning English. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Catherine Cole. Today, we visit a Southern California street that leads back hundreds of years.
The family stepped off a train at Union Station in Los Angeles. The mother looked around in the bright, California sunshine, and shook her head. "Where are we?" she asked. "I thought this was supposed to be downtown, the center of the city." The woman had expected to be completely surrounded by huge office buildings, but instead, she and her family felt as if they had somehow landed in another time. Their train ride had led them to the oldest part of downtown Los Angeles. The visitors had stepped back through centuries of history. They stood near the birthplace of Los Angeles, now the second largest city in the United States. They were close to where settlers and a few soldiers from Spain first set up the city in 1781. The settlers had left a nearby Roman Catholic religious center called Mission San Gabriel Archangel. They wanted to set up a community on the edges of the river, then known as Posilucla.
Today, the place where the settlers started new lives is part of the El Pueblo de Los Angeles Historical Monument. The word monument sometimes makes people think of a traditional statue, perhaps a man riding a horse. But this monument includes historic homes, museums, and other buildings, parks, marketplaces, plazas, and many artworks. It has places to rest, eat, play, and places to think about what life was once like here. A marketplace and community event center called Olvera Street form a lively part of the historical monument.
La placita Olvera aquí es.
Chances are it is busy on Olvera Street today, but then energetic activity goes on here most of the time. People buy and sell things. Some people take lots of pictures. They stop for drinks, coffee, and meals. And nearly every day, mariachi bands fill the air with song and music from the Spanish-speaking world. And you hear many other languages spoken as well.
Millions of tourists pass each year among Olvera Street's puestos, or small businesses. They buy everything from imported leather goods to big hats, from dresses to shoes, from musical instruments to puppets hanging from strings. Olvera Street marks the heritage and the continuing relationship of the movie and television industry of Hollywood, a Los Angeles neighborhood, and nearby Burbank. Parts of movies and television shows are often filmed along Olvera Street and in the neighboring plaza. Long ago, silent film star Charlie Chaplin rescued child actor Jackie Coogan from a threatening welfare office in the 1923 movie The Kid. A 1952 film called The Ring told about a Mexican-American prize fighter struggling to gain a better life. And Danny Glover and Mel Gibson ran toward the plaza in the 1992 film Lethal Weapon 3. More recently, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt danced there in the 2005 movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They danced in the center, or courtyard, of the Francisco Avila Adobe Historic Home. The building is said to be the oldest structure made of the material adobe in Los Angeles. A man named Francisco Avila had the home built in 1818.
Olvera Street is more than a tourist center and a movie set. It also has been used to mark or celebrate special events. The blessing of the animals is a good example. During the ceremony, people present their animals to a religious leader who offers thanks for the creatures. Thousands of people bring cows, birds, cats, dogs, horses, and other animals for the ceremony. Among the other animals are ferrets, lizards, llamas, ponies, and rabbits.
Christopher Espinoza works as general manager of the El Pueblo de Los Angeles Historical Monument. He says his favorite event is All Souls Day, the Day of the Dead. In Spanish, it is called El Día de los Muertos.
It's like the Mexican version of Halloween, and the main day lands on All Souls Day, a time period where traditionally you respect the people who have passed.
Mr. Espinoza described some of the event's many activities on Olvera Street.
And there's altars with beautiful marigolds, and then there's like a procession that occurs every day on Olvera Street and into the plaza. And every night there's dancing. And each day it builds bigger and bigger and bigger until the final day, the Dia de los Muertos. And that day there's this beautiful dance, and the place is jam-packed.
Olvera Street probably would not have existed without huge effort. That is especially true of the volunteer work and influence of a woman named Christine Sterling. By the 1920s, large numbers of immigrants had arrived in California and other parts of the United States. The Avila Adobe and other historic buildings had fallen into poor condition. Ms. Sterling loved both history and Los Angeles. She heard that the oldest adobe structure in the city was threatened with destruction, and she started a campaign to save it.
People who wanted to rescue the Avila House donated money to repair and restore it. But not enough was raised. In 1928, the city government approved orders to condemn the home. But Mrs. Sterling followed with a note of her own. She accused officials of not caring about the city's past. Public opinion arose against destroying the old building. She and many in the public supported the return of the Avila Adobe and other places along Olvera Street to their former appearance. Ms. Sterling appealed to Harry Chandler for help. He was publisher of the Los Angeles Times newspaper during that period. She described her dream of a colorful marketplace and cultural center to Chandler. Chandler's newspaper aided her campaign, and he invited businessmen to fundraising meals. Harry Chandler was a powerful man. Other powerful people came to the expensive meals. With their help and that of others, the goal was reached. Hasta que muera.
On Easter Sunday, 1930, the dream of Ms. Sterling and many people from that neighborhood came true. Olvera Street opened with the name Paseo de Los Angeles. Visitors immediately made the area a success. Neighborhood people called it Olvera Street, the street's postal office name. It honored Augustin Olvera. He became the first county judge in the new county of Los Angeles in 1850. Ms. Sterling also helped people with special skills find a place to demonstrate those skills. For example, in the 1920s, she visited Tijuana, Mexico. While there, she saw skilled handmade craftwork by the father of a present Olvera Street businessman. She liked what she saw, and invited the craftsman to work in Los Angeles. But he didn't take the invitation seriously.
Jesus Hernandez is the son of that man. He tells the story.
She told him, I want to ask you to come to Olvera Street in Los Angeles. And my father said, yeah, whatever. He was very young. He was probably in mid-20s.
Happily for the father and for Olvera Street, the man later received another invitation. His son remembers that time he accepted. Jesus Hernandez has a business on Olvera Street, just as his father did. He has operated the import store for many years. He says he sells everything.
Not that I'm getting rich, but this is a tradition. This is what they taught me. This is what does. This is the only thing I know how to do.
A stone's throw from the street is the Italian Museum of Los Angeles, home to a mural called America Tropical. The Mexican artist David Alfaro Siqueiros created the painting on an upper-level outdoor wall overlooking Olvera Street. It is the only surviving public mural by Siqueiros in the U.S. that remains where it was painted. Some experts say Siqueiros was a major Mexican artist of the 20th century. Some call him the father of the Los Angeles mural movement. Yet America Tropical was painted over and nearly destroyed. For many years, it was forgotten.
The mural shows a poor Mexican Indian tied onto a cross. An eagle above the Indian looks threatening. Critics said the mural accuses the U.S. of oppressing poor people. To many people in Los Angeles, it was an unwelcome sight. But over the years, defenders recognized the mural's importance. They included experts from the Getty Conservation Institute. The institute formed a partnership with the city. Thanks to a project costing millions of dollars, the painting has been brought as close as possible to its earliest condition. People can study the mural, its artist, and the methods experts used to save it in the America Tropical Interpretive Center. A special platform, a raised structure, provides visitors with a good look at the painting. They enter the platform through Sepulveda House in Olvera Street.
The history of Siqueiros' work is one of the many stories told on Olvera Street. It is a place of memories and images of America's second largest city during the years Los Angeles invented itself.
This program was written by Gerilyn Watson. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Catherine Cole. Join us again next week for another This is America from VOA Learning English.